Network News. I'm Linda Sherman. Israel has voted to accept a U.S.-backed roadmap for Middle East peace. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and the Israeli cabinet voted to accept it yesterday. Sharon has been a critic of the plan and says Israel will have to make painful concessions. The United States says it will address Israeli concerns as the roadmap is put in place. It calls for an end to violence and to establish a Palestinian state by 2005. Palestinians support the proposal. Officials say Sharon and Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas could hold a summit later this week. Strong words out of Iran's ambassador to the United Nations today as Javad Zarif tells ABC this week that if the United States only wants to speak through the language of pressure, then Iran will resist. Zarif's remarks come in response to a report in the Washington Post saying the Bush administration appears ready to enact a policy of actively trying to overthrow the Iranian government when senior members get together for a meeting on Tuesday.
Iran has a number of concerns about U.S. behavior. It seems from the allegations that are coming from Washington that U.S. has a number of concerns. And we believe that these mutual concerns can be addressed. But they can be addressed once the U.S. is prepared to speak through mutual respect and not through pressure.
The current situation in Iran is the one that deserves the Bush administration's utmost attention. That's a rally cry from California Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman.
Well, many of us felt that Iran was more of a clear and present danger than Iraq last year and in the recent years. Iran, after all, is arming Hezbollah terrorists along the Lebanese border with Israel.
Appearing yesterday on CBS's Face the Nation, Harman also blasted the Shiite Muslim state for apparently attempting to arm the Palestinians, building weapons of mass destruction, and making progress toward a nuclear arsenal. We'll have more right after this.
You know, MTV changed the way people look at television. Well, I helped change the way they look at MTV. I'm Lauren Lazen, Vice President of MTV News and Specials. I'm responsible for those documentaries on racism and drugs, sexual abuse and AIDS. You know, the ones that make some people uncomfortable, but make everybody think. I'm not uncomfortable speaking up for my ideas. Never have been. Even in school, where it wasn't always cool for a girl to be smart, my parents expected great things from me, so I did too. If you have a daughter, encourage her to stand up and be heard in school. Let her know it's cool to be smart, even in front of boys. Tell her to go for it, and then let her. Expect the best from a girl. That's what you'll get.
Help your daughter speak up for her ideas in school. Call 1-800-WCC-4GIRLS. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the Women's College Coalition.
U.S. intelligence officials say terrorists could be planning an orchestrated spring-summer worldwide offensive. Newsweek reporting an attempted attack on the U.S. is likely within the next 30 to 90 days. They also say they've uncovered some ongoing plots. One plot involved an Ohio truck driver asked to get tools necessary to loosen the bolts on suspension bridges. He also claimed that cargo trucks can easily drive underneath passenger jets without arousing suspicion. We'll be back with more after this.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Former President George Bush and Bill Clinton joined boxing great Muhammad Ali and TV talk show host David Letterman on the list of celebrities who came to watch the Indy 500 this weekend. Bush came at the invitation of a longtime friend and racing team owner Tom Kelly.
I've been to Fort Wayne a couple times, and I've been to Kenny Bunkport a couple times, and I was with him playing golf about a month and a half ago, and I said, you know, you promised me to come to the 500. I want you to come this year, and he said, okay, I'll come.
Kelly says Bush even spent time in the team's garage on Gasoline Alley. Dancer and pop music star Paula Abdul, as well as comedian Tim Allen, were also seen at the Speedway yesterday. Bruce Almighty replaced The Matrix Reloaded at the top of the box office charts this weekend. It's taken in $70.5 million for the weekend so far, compared with The Matrix sequel, with $37.2 million. Most studios are waiting until after Monday to reveal how much other movies made. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with another Car Clinic Minute. Oxymorons. You know, the things that just don't seem to go together, like jumbo shrimp or deafening silence. How about new car and service manager? You'll be surprised. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com. If thinking of the service manager while inking your new car deal seems like an oxymoron, think again. Though today's cars are certainly more roadworthy than their predecessors, they can still break. In fact, the experts at the L.A. Auto Show report that automotive repair is a $200 billion business, and one of every three cars serviced returns for additional work. So ask your new car salesperson for an introduction to the service manager. It's a small investment with a big payoff at repair time and for maintenance checks. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from sea to shining sea and broadcast from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite all across North America. And streaming live on the internet from iamericaradio.com and radiopower.org and tomhartman.com. Welcome to our program today, and happy Memorial Day. Our chat room is open. If you go to tomhartman.com and click on the radio show link and then click on the chat room link, it'll drop you into it. And if you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. We had a couple of people who had posted messages in our on our message board at tomhartman.com. Sawdust from Florida posted a message. He said he's talking about fuel cells, and there was a discussion going on elsewhere on the message board. And he said, "I forgot on the other fuel cell thread you started you stated that another problem with fuel cells is that they emit water vapor, and water vapor in mass quantities is one of the most aggressive greenhouse gases. There's concern that adding that much water vapor to the atmosphere would be truly climate changing." Interesting. One of the things that the global warming deniers, led by Fred Singer, this kind of pseudo scientist who seems to pop up whenever who's funded by some of the largest oil companies in the world, who seems to pop up whenever anybody talks about global warming, say one of their big positions is it's all water vapor is the big problem. It's not carbon dioxide. You know, it's not these power plants. It's water vapor. And then of course there are other. Big thing is methane. It's methane. It's cows farting. That's what you need to worry about. Well, you know, methane is a problem. The reality, though, is that what gets cycled through cows would also just decompose if it wasn't for the cows. So, you know, vegetable matter producing methane, whether it goes through a cow or not, it's, you know, methane is methane, and it gets produced as a consequence of the breakdown of vegetable matter, and then methane itself eventually breaks down. Water vapor, though, is interesting because it is more effective at holding heat into the earth than is carbon dioxide. So it's a more potent greenhouse gas, as it were. It's only technically a gas. And but the reality is that the amount of carbon the amount of water vapor that the atmosphere can hold is constrained by one single variable, and that's the temperature of the atmosphere. How much energy the atmosphere has. So as you see this in the wintertime, as it gets colder and colder, the humidity drops and drops, and you get below 32 degrees, and the humidity in the air outside starts dropping dramatically because the air is so cold it can no longer hold water vapor in suspension. The water vapor falls out of the air as dew or as frost or as snow. So the concern about fuel cells making water vapor is not that big a deal because the atmosphere will take it or not take it depending on its energy. But the big problem with water vapor and fuel and the whole thing of the environment is that as the atmosphere warms, and it has already warmed a little less than 1 degree Celsius in the last 20 years, which is a real significant amount. We have more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere now than we have in 430,000 years. As the atmosphere warms, its ability to hold water vapor increases, which then will cause it to warm even faster. So this becomes a loop, you know, a dog chasing its tail faster and faster. And it's one of the things that gives climate scientists nightmares that this spiral could begin. But it won't be driven by fuel cells. It'll be driven by the increase in temperature, which is caused by carbon dioxide. Another member in New Jersey, PAS07920, says, I've heard mention that the flight suit President Bush wore for the carrier landing accentuated his manhood. Anybody know of any pictures out there displaying this? And a couple of our other members pointed him to a few websites. He says it's a scary time when Patrick Buchanan is a voice of reason. So, interesting comments on our message board today. It's Memorial Day, as we've said, and we have some thoughts. I wanted to share with you some clips relevant to this and just kind of dig into this for the first half hour here. The first is two little short pieces from Eisenhower's farewell address. We had played some of this a couple of weeks ago, as I recall, and several people actually emailed me and said they'd like to hear more, they'd like to know more about this. This was as Eisenhower was leaving the nation, or leaving the presidency in 1960. It was the end of his 8 years as president, and this was his farewell address. And the whole thing only lasts about 9 minutes, and this is just a little clip from it where he's talking about his experience as a warrior. I mean, this is the guy who was the commander, commander of the Supreme Allied Forces in Europe, and an extraordinary general. And here's his comments about this, and then followed by his ending summary.
As one who has witnessed the horror and the lingering sadness of war, as one who knows that another war could utterly destroy this civilization, which has been so slowly and painfully built over thousands of years, I wish I could say tonight that a lasting peace is in sight. Happily, I can say that war has been avoided. Steady progress toward our ultimate goal has been made, but so much remains to be done.
And then Eisenhower talked about what he felt needed to be done, his vision for the future.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration. We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility. That all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth. And that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
And those were Eisenhower's final words to the nation. And I think, you know, hearing from one of our nation's warriors on this Memorial Day is perhaps a very strong and important one. Some other comments. By the way, in our chat room at tomhartman.com, click on the radio show link and then click on the chat room link. Satterish just posted an email. Hey, Tom, happy Memorial Day. If you have a chance today, could you take a minute to debunk supply-side economic theory? From what I've read, Reaganomics don't create jobs, and in fact, the higher corporate profits generated by tax cuts for the rich in the 80s led to losses of jobs due to automation and moving operations overseas. It's my understanding that corporations also took the opportunity to develop excess capacity overseas to protect them from collective bargaining by U.S. employees. I think there's also a causal link between real estate speculation in the 80s and the SNL scandals of the early 90s. Thanks. Big order there. It's a lot of stuff. And you've got it. You've nailed it down just exactly right. And let me get back to that in the second half hour. I just want to finish this stuff with Memorial Day here, but some good points there. Samuel Adams, this is from the Memorial Day op-ed editorial that BuzzFlash.com wrote. It was from contributing writer Rebecca Knight, who did some great research. And she pulled together some quotes, and it's interesting because Louise was doing some research this morning for the show, and she brought me Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. And she said, I think there's some good stuff in here. And I was reading it and marking it up. And then we saw this thing on BuzzFlash, and sure enough, there's the same speech. So great minds think alike. BuzzFlash Memorial Day. This from Sam Adams, and this will be our quote for the day. If ever time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin. Samuel Adams, 1770, I'm guessing in the 1776s, more or less. He was only really outspoken and quite active for about 2 years there. Then Patrick Henry, in 1776, explicitly said, "No man thinks more highly than I do of patriotism." He said, "Should I keep back my opinions at such a time through fear of giving offense? If I should, I should consider myself as guilty of treason toward my country and of an act as disloyal toward the majesty of heaven, which I revere above all earthly kings. Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." And then a marvelous quote from President Theodore Roosevelt back in 1907. "It is unpatriotic not to tell the truth, whether about the president or anyone else." Now, we hold up a mirror to this, and we see Attorney General John Ashcroft, in his testimony before the Senate, saying, and just contrast this. This is, you know, to those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty. He was speaking to those who dared speak out about the Patriot Act. "My message is this. Your tactics only aid terrorists, for they erode our national unity and diminish our resolve. They give ammunition to America's enemies and pause to America's friends." The exact same sentiment that Joseph McCarthy said over and over. The exact same sentiment that Stalin used to justify his murder of anyone who opposed his regime. The exact same sentiment used by Hitler and by Castro and by a whole long legion of tyrants. This is that's not American patriotism. Veterans for Justice has a interesting bunch of stuff on their website for today. For Memorial Day, we at VetsForJustice.com have sat back and watched in amazement as the Republican administration has given America's wealth and our children's future away to nation after nation in the form of foreign aid. We've been angered because the massive W. Bush foreign aid giveaways were not intended to help nations, but rather used to personally enhance Bush politically by buying United Nations votes to support his war plans. And there have been numerous articles in the press about this, about the sudden changes in our foreign aid policies as a consequence of who voted with us and who voted for us in the Iraq war thing in the UN. In other words, our president was misusing billions, says Vets for Justice, and billions of dollars to enhance himself politically. Meanwhile, as W. Bush was putting our country deep in debt for his own personal political gain, he was stealing from America's veterans and breaking enlistment promises to them. He wanted the veterans' money to fund his massive tax cuts for the rich. And they go on to say that they're very concerned about this, the cutting of veterans' benefits. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stick around. We'll return soon.
What happened to those sandpaper feet? They're so soft now. Went to the podiatrist, huh?
No, I used Carousel. I got it at the store in the foot care section.
Carousel?
Yeah, K-E-R-A-S-A-L.
Carousel, used and dispensed by podiatrists for years, gently exfoliates and moisturizes dry, rough, scaly feet in just days. Preferred by 9 out of 10 over the products they usually use.
Maybe I should use Carousel, too.
You know, I was going to say something.
Hey, Carousel. It's everything your feet need.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Where the grapes of wrath.
With the U.S. Air Force Marching Band, and it's interesting, this song, it was written by Julia Howe Ward, and it was one of the songs that was most commonly associated with Memorial Day back when it was known as Decoration Day, which was in 1868. Decoration Day was started as a day for people to go out and decorate, strew flowers on. In fact, the original proclamation is the 30th of May 1868 is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion, and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land. And this originally, it started out actually as a Confederate thing, and then it became a Union thing. And Julia Ward Howe, talking about how he's emptying out the grapes of wrath. Actually, the exact quote is, he's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. That it's like the end of violence, letting go. And she, this woman has a remarkable history. And it's tied in many ways to Memorial Day. And I think, you know, I know that a lot of folks are playing for Memorial Day taps, which is fine and fitting. But I think that the Battle Hymn of the Republic and Julia Ward Howe and her story are really connected, really relevant. She wrote this because Reverend James Freeman Clark had asked her to come up with a poem or a song to replace John Brown's Body, which is what most of the Union soldiers sang as an unofficial anthem, basically, for the Army. And after having written this, she became relatively famous as a consequence of writing this. And so she decided to use her fame to promote the cause she really cared about, which was peace. And so she proposed that there should be a day when the mothers of America rose up and spoke out in favor of peace and for the end of war. Now, keep in mind, she had just lived through this incredibly bloody war. She was born in 1819 and died in 1910, and she lived through the Civil War. And so she was saying, never again. And so she issued this proclamation, and it became what we today call Mother's Day. But she's most famous for the song that was, up until the middle part of the 20th century, the main song associated with Memorial Day, or what was then called Decoration Day. She said, arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be of water or of fear, say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, and each bearing after her own time the sacred impress not of Caesar, but of God. Remarkable from Julia Ward Howe, echoing again the sentiments of Dwight Eisenhower, that when war is necessary, it's a terrible thing, but it's a necessary thing. But to promote it, to encourage it, to seek after it, is not the highest level of humanity. But we want to honor those who gave their lives for this country. Stay with us. I'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I say it's like fire.
No, I'd say blowtorch.
I describe it this way. Oh.
They're talking about the burn of indigestion and pain. How can you cool the burning fast? With Alka-Seltzer. Effervescent Alka-Seltzer is ready to go to work instantly to cool the burn of indigestion and pain fast. Alka-Seltzer, with the refreshing lemon-lime taste. Nothing cools the burn of indigestion and pain faster. Use as directed.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People began complaining about air pollution at least 7 centuries ago. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The impact of air pollution on the environment, the climate, and human health remains a top public issue, but it's not a new one. Barbara Fries is the author of Coal, A Human History.
We have complaints in Britain from as early as the 1300s about the impact of coal on the air of London. By the 1660s, the air of London was so thick with coal smoke and soot that one of the contemporary authors referred to the city as a suburb of hell.
Fries says people have noted the impact of air pollution on respiratory health for centuries, but she says they also blamed it for a lot of other things.
We also had a lot of concerns about it causing baldness, tooth decay, acne. The list goes on and on. It took a while for us to kind of narrow it down and figure out really what the problem was.
Fries says air pollution from coal and its link to respiratory disease became a major public health concern in the late 1800s. She says we haven't solved it yet.
We have made the absolute concentration of coal pollution go down, at least in urban settings, and yet we still have so much coal pollution that is spread out over huge areas throughout, you know, much of the eastern half of the United States, that we're now calculating, based on recent studies, that thousands and possibly tens of thousands of Americans may be dying every year from coal pollution. It is a public health threat of the first order, and generally speaking, I don't think the public knows that.
Fries says the United States burns more coal today than at any time in its history. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Are you worried that the road less traveled is a dead end? I feel your pain. It's not easy to be positive and happy and peaceful in a world that's so often negative and filled with war and hatred and SARS, but we can do it together. Join me, Nancy Skinner, for a radio evolution. It's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Populi, that's Voice of the People. It's a program where people talk about the world around us and the one we want to create.
That's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Pop, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
I want peace.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, talk radio for the rest of us. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. If you'd like to drop in on our conference room or our chat room, we've got several people in there right now. It's TomHartman.com. Just go to www.TomHartman.com. There's a link at the top of the page to the radio show page, and then once you get to the radio show page, there's a link over on the left-hand side to the chat room, and that will take you in there. And let's see, what needs to be said is that at this point, I'm reading from the chat room, Tom, what needs to be said and repeated that at this point there's little to no difference between Republicans and Democrats. After all, it was Clinton and his cabal who pioneered the idea of international law being merely a tissue to cover U.S. aggression at U.S. option. Remember that Clinton neither sought nor received U.N. sanction for the NATO rape of Yugoslavia. Bush has merely expanded tremendously that precedent. Yeah, I'm not sufficiently well educated, I have to confess, about the Yugoslavia situation to really comment on it. I haven't done my homework there. My recollection at the time was that it seemed that there was a terrible mess and that probably somebody should do something, although you could say the same thing about what's going on in the Congo right now, the same thing about what's going on in Zaire right now. But there was a consensus with regard to NATO. But in any case, I can't, like I said, I'm not, okay, you are. Call the show, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to make a comment about this. As to the comments about Reaganomics not creating jobs and trickle-down economics, yes, this is a very real problem, a real situation. The whole rationale behind the reduction, for example, in the dividends tax was that cutting down the dividends tax would cause there to be more money for investment. Of course, it's going to make much more wealth for those people, or much lower tax rates, certainly, more cash in their pockets for those people who earn their living by sitting on their butts waiting for their dividend checks to arrive, the Wall Street Journal refers to as the Republican investor class. But is it going to create jobs? I would suggest that what's going to happen, actually, is that because dividends are not taxed, then it's going to be easier. Well, there's going to be pressure on corporations to pay dividends, because, you know, one of the rationales was that corporations would turn to the sale of stock to raise money rather than debt, and that would be a good thing, because if they're just raising debt, then they're competing in the marketplace against the U.S. government to borrow money, and that'll drive interest rates up, and the U.S. government needs to borrow all the money it can, because right now, you notice we just raised the debt ceiling to $7 trillion last week. $7 trillion for about 100 million wage earners is $70,000 per wage earner. You think you're not in debt? You are. $70,000. And we all owe that money to our government, which has borrowed it on our behalf in order to try to produce good times. Most of it was borrowed during the Reagan administration, and now a big chunk of the rest of it is being borrowed in the Bush administration. And so anyhow, what will happen is that they don't want corporations competing with the government for that debt, so the corporations are going to have to generate dividends, profits that they pay out to their shareholders. Well, if corporations have to make dividends, the demand for corporate profit is going to be even higher than it used to be. Which means that corporations are going to start laying off people and moving overseas when they can get cheaper labor overseas. They're going to start cutting back on jobs and cutting back on, you know, they're saving money anywhere they possibly can to crank up profits, and they're going to increase prices to the consumer. I mean, this is just a predictable consequence that corporate profits will have to increase so that the investor class can make more money, so that the benefits of this dividend tax cut can be realized. This is something that, in my opinion, was not particularly well thought out. In fact, it was a speech by Charles Schwab just about 6 or 8 months ago that George Bush happened to be at, where he kind of offhand in his speech said, and we ought to cut the dividend tax. And Bush said, oh, that's a great idea. Of course, Bush makes a lot of his money from dividends. He owns, you know, millions of dollars worth of stock, as does Cheney, as does Rumsfeld, and so on. So, anyway, this is the problem that we're facing. A few of our legislative alerts, things that are going on that you need to know about. Representative Rush Holt has introduced legislation to require all voting machines to produce a voter-verified paper trail. This is an issue that I wrote about for Common Dreams back last year. This whole issue of the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, the Help America Vote Act was passed in October of the year before last. And the rationale that was used to push this Republican-sponsored legislation through was that the terrible mess in Florida, you'll recall, with hanging chads and this and that and the other thing, and of course they were still trying to point to that. They didn't really want anybody to be reporting on the fact that 79,000 blacks in predominantly Democratic districts had been stripped from the voting rolls illegally. And that's really how Bush won Florida. Although, the New York Times then later came out and said actually Bush didn't win Florida. When they did the final recount, they found that Gore actually had more votes than Bush. But in any case, not to revisit ancient history too often here, they passed this legislation to put these computer-controlled, modem-connected, no paper trail, unauditable, private corporation-owned, or at least the software code-owned, voting machines, which are just fancy computers, into polling places. And they did them all over Florida just in time for the 2002 election, in which straw polls were showing that Jeb Bush was going to probably lose that election by somewhere around 70 or 80,000 votes. And sure enough, in the 2002 election, quote, brand new computer voting systems used in Florida lost over 100,000 votes due to a software error, end quote. Was it an error or was it fraud? There's no way to know, because the corporation that put those machines in, which was formerly headed by a Republican senator, United States Senator Chuck Hagel, says, we can't look at their source code because as a person, a corporate person, they are entitled to protection under the Fourth Amendment, privacy protections under the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. Errors and irregularities were also reported in New Jersey, Missouri, Georgia, Texas, and at least 10 other states. And so I wrote a couple of op-eds about this for Common Dreams, and other people have taken up the cause. There's a marvelous documentary that has just been released called Unprecedented. And I'm sure if you just go into Google and type in Unprecedented and 2000 election, you'll find it. You can buy it online. And that goes into great detail about the 2000 election and what happened and now these voting machines. So this Representative Rush Holt has introduced a bill saying that any voting machine that's going to generate a computer-tabulated vote, he's the congressman from the 12th District of New Jersey, that any voting machine that's going to tabulate a vote has to also produce a paper receipt that the voter can look at and say, yes, that's actually what I voted for. Because, for example, in Florida, there were many people who were reporting that they went in, they pushed the button for Jeb Bush's opponent, and the machine registered the vote for Jeb Bush. So this would generate a paper trail that they can look at and say, yes, that's who I voted for, and then they put that in a box, and it becomes an auditable paper trail. Now, one of the problems is that the state of Nebraska, Chuck Hagel's home state, the Republican senator who used to be the president of the voting machine company, passed a law saying that it is illegal for election officials to handle paper ballots or to handle any kind of paper that might audit a voting machine. So they're going to have to change that law, and hopefully they will. But anyhow, this one piece of legislation has been passed. Another one, and I noticed that there's a couple of people in the chat room, and there's a bunch of type right there, but I would have to pause in my talking here to read it, and it would create dead air. I'll read it during the break, and we'll come back to your comments right after the break. Alaska. This is Northern Revolt. This is ABC News. Alaska has joined a growing national rebellion against the U.S. Patriot Act. Oh, we have calls. I'm sorry. David in San Luis Obispo, California, on the Bush statement, God on our side. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. And, man, I tell you, it's wonderful to have discovered you on the Internet. I'm in a very conservative area, and I've been, you know, inundated by conservative talk radio, and, man, what a blessing this is.
Well, let us know the radio stations in your area, and we'll send them a demo and try to get on the air in your area as well.
You got it. I'll do that. Anyway, I'm calling because I wrote a poem. It's entitled "Because God Is on Our Side."
Oh, it's like the Bob Dylan song.
Huh?
You're familiar with the Bob Dylan song at the same time?
Yeah, I am. But this is totally different than his.
Okay.
But if you'd like, I read you some of it here.
If it's brief, sure.
Okay, I'll have to jump around there because it's 10 verses long.
Yeah, well,
I'll make it brief. Our cause is just; they've done us wrong. Our flags wave high and ride from SUVs and corporate poles because God is on our side. Why, look, we're far superior. They don't believe, we cried. Our culture and faith, we're sure they'll want. Because God is on our side. Our arrogant behavior, it seems to coincide with mounting anger towards us, because God is on our side. Roman and other empires, their prominence did slide when they began to think and act like God was on their side. I pray we start to listen to different folk worldwide and live and love and tolerate, because God's on all our side.
Oh, that's brilliant, David. That's brilliant. Very well done.
Thank you.
thanks for calling in. I appreciate your sharing that with us and look forward to hearing from you. Our email is tom@tomhartman.com. Off the website, tomhartman.com. Mike in Washington, D.C. on Yugoslavia and Reagan's trickle-down economics. Come on in and make yourself at home, Mike. What's your question?
No question.
Or a comment. Okay.
First of all, I was the one that was writing you about the Yugoslav situation in the chat
room. Oh, you're in our chat room. Great.
Yes. And all that typing is mine, at least most of it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So here's the thing. Believe it or not, the elder Bush got it right.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about Reaganomics and said it is voodoo economics.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
You know, and they were. It was correct. It hasn't changed one little bit. And yet, his son is following the same voodoo to a higher degree than even Reagan did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is going to eventually crash our system. And what the idiots.
Oh, it's already starting to. Look at the states. I mean, the cracks are not just visible. They're oppressive. This, you know, he calls this a tax cut, but the reality is that the wealthy who pay the majority of income taxes will see their taxes cut. The middle class who pay the majority of their taxes in local taxes, state taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, and payroll taxes are going to see dramatic tax increases because all of these localities, municipalities, and states are having to jack up their taxes. Sorry,
correct.
forgive the interruption there. But.
And that's part of the problem. What the elite tend to forget is the reason that we got such things as the eight-hour day and other legislation like Social Security and so forth was that we were facing essentially a revolution at home.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they want a repeat of Haymarket and all the other wonderful things that came about in the Gilded Age of the 1880s and 90s,
which led to the populist movement and which produced some good. I mean that led to the direct election of the Senate, and
right.
the women's suffrage movement and all and.
But remember how many people died,
yeah.
And how many were injured at the Pullman riots, Haymarket.
Mm-hmm.
The Carnegie riots,
yes.
Chasing down the Molly Maguires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's amazing how few people are familiar with this history, by the way, how few people in America are familiar at all with that aspect of American history.
Well, most people don't know American history. They know a little bit of American myth,
mm.
And they know bloody little about the actual history of the country. To say that you know anything about American history, first you have to read People's History of the United States to give you the other side of the story.
Yeah,
the
Howard
one
Zinn's
that we're
book.
Inculcated with in our brainwashing, which passes for education.
Yeah, or if it, to be charitable, we could just at the very least call it dumbing down. So, yeah, good point, Mike.
Tremendously.
Yeah.
And I will send you some materials about Yugoslavia so you can understand where I'm coming from, but.
Okay, great. Yeah, I saw your note here that it was a civil war and that, you know, why should we invest ourselves in a civil war?
Right, and it was a Western-inspired and instigated civil war.
Right.
You have to remember that we were the ones who were causing the dissolution of the state of Yugoslavia,
mm-hmm.
by illegally recognizing breakaway entities as states in total violation of the Helsinki Accords. Remember those? You know,
yes.
where borders will not be changed, et
yes.
cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, they never bothered
yes.
to follow their own rules.
Yep. Mike, send me the information. I'd love to read it. I would like to educate myself about that issue. It's one that, you know, during that period of time, I was doing a lot of traveling and wasn't paying that much attention to the news. So I look forward to getting it. And great. And thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling in. Pokemo Pete in New Jersey says, American myth as it pertains to Reagan cut taxes. But he raised them four times between 82 and 84 and again in 86. He had to make up for the damage or some of the damage. I mean, Bush, his vice president, later also had to raise taxes. Anyhow, he also says New Jersey. He says the average benefit of the tax cut will be $1,040 or $20 per week. Now, that's the average. Keep in mind that means that the as we've done the math before, the billionaires will get huge amounts and the average person will get much less. But anyway, even with huge amounts and the average person will get much less, but care for half the Bush tax cuts. The Bush tax cuts costing $350 billion. The real cost, according to the Office of Management and Budget, closer to $800 billion. And the most expensive national health care program that has been proposed by the Democrats is $84 billion. So we could have done national health care three or four or five or more times over. And where is the greatest need for our millionaires and multimillionaires like George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and right on through his administration to get huge rebate checks or for national health care? In the next hour, in fact, we're going to really dig into these issues of what does conservative mean and what does liberal mean. If ever a time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin, said Samuel Adams. Here with the Tom Hartman program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stick around. We'll return in just a minute.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25!
Oh man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. 247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah.
Peter Werbe Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werbe Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern, on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werbe and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Here they come again. Catch us if you can. Time to get a move on. We were young with all of our might.
To the vast conspiracy of the radical middle. Take no imitations. If you'd like to be on the program today, it's 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937 for the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. And we're talking about some legislative alerts here. GOP and Democrats are squabbling over aiding vets. This is from Newsday.com. Democrats cite Congressional Budget Office figures that conclude spending projections would leave the Veterans Affairs Department $6.2 billion short of what it needs to meet its obligations over the next 10 years. They also say that cost-cutting proposed by Bush, when fully put in place, would force more than 1.4 million veterans to be denied health care or would drop them from the VA system altogether. In response to this, Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, has introduced a bill that would include $1,000 bonuses for those who served in imminent danger status in Iraq and Afghanistan and would provide money to reduce the waiting times. Over 200,000 veterans now, today, on Memorial Day, are waiting up to 6 months for an appointment at VA hospitals. Not for admission, but just for an appointment to see a doctor. 200,000 veterans on a six-month waiting list, and this administration is cutting veterans' funding. While they are wearing the badge of patriotism and, you know, stunts on the USS Abraham Lincoln to set themselves up for the next election cycle, it is not healthy. This is the kind of hypocrisy that, in my opinion, Samuel Adams was talking about. Oppose destructive energy bill. There's a new bill before Congress. It's in the Senate, actually. It's proposed by the Senate Republicans that would give more than $10 billion in tax breaks to corporate oil, gas, coal, and nuclear interests, including subsidies of coal bed methane drilling, a serious threat to the West's limited resources. Would take steps to limit decades-old drilling bans off the Atlantic and Pacific coasts while preventing coastal states from fighting this natural resource exploitation. This from a party that claims to be in favor of states' rights. Excludes Native American lands from federal environmental protections. Extends a loophole allowing the auto industry to avoid meaningful improvements regarding fuel efficiency. And permanently helps the nuclear industry in the event that there was an accident. This is Senate Bill 14. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. Stay with us. We'll be back after the news. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Linda Sherman. Four crewmen were killed when a boiler room explosion ignited a fire aboard a cruise ship docked at the Port of Miami early yesterday. Coast Guard said 17 others on the ship were injured, but there were no passengers among those hurt aboard Norwegian Cruise Line ship. Coast Guard Petty Officer Anastasia Burns says the explosion may have been caused by a steam leak. Two crewmen died in the explosion. Two others died later at a nearby hospital. A 23-year-old sailor from Philly is presumed dead after a bizarre accident aboard a ship returning to Virginia from Iraq. Military officials say Petty Officer 3rd Class Dwayne Williams was chasing a football on the deck of the assault ship USS Nassau when he tripped and fell overboard. His body has not yet been recovered. NBC's Meet the Press held a roundtable discussion on nations' terror alert levels being raised a notch higher to orange. Senators Pat Roberts of Kansas, Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, and Joe Biden of Delaware offered their takes on the latest alert level. Senator Roberts says the heightened terror alert is legitimate, but unfortunately generic.
Typically, in a report of this type, you get a generic warning, but the who and the when and the where and the specifics are very hard to come by.
Roberts says he also understands it's exasperating not to know all the factors. Senator Rockefeller said the orange alert is appropriate considering the attacks in Saudi Arabia that not only killed Americans but al-Qaeda's own Muslims, which were targeted and killed. It doesn't happen very often, but this year's Indianapolis 500-mile race was not a sellout. Speedway officials say pre-race ticket sales were down, they think, because of the economy. Fans were surprised to see how easy it was to get a ticket.
I called ahead, and the lady said that there were tickets available.
Here to find out that we can go straight into the track and buy the tickets right before the race. Kind of unheard of to me.
The Indy 500 is the world's largest single-day sporting event in terms of attendance. We'll be back right after this.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What should you do? See your doctor, because a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Yes. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Investors will have a long list of economic reports to consider during a shortened trading week on Wall Street this week. The markets are closed today for the holiday, but when trading resumes tomorrow, the first of a series of key economic reports hits the street. After a powerful rally that has seen the S&P 500 jump 16% since mid-March, worries about the staying power of recent gains are weighing heavily on the minds of investors. Last week, the major market averages all finished lower. We'll be back with more right after this.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Director Gus Van Sant is the winner of the top award at Cannes for his movie about school violence called Elephant. The movie uses non-actor kids to show how violence can turn high school life into tragedy. This Thursday will mark the 50th anniversary of the first ascent of Mount Everest as climbers from around the world gather in the capital of Nepal to celebrate with street festivals, processions, concerts, and parties. It was on May 29, 1953 that Sir Edmund Hillary and the Nepali Sherpa, Tenzing Norgay, became the first people to reach the top of the 29,000-foot mountain. Hillary, who is now 83 years old, will be taken through the streets of Kathmandu in a horse-drawn carriage on Tuesday, leading many of the climbers who have followed in his footsteps over the years. About 1,200 people have climbed Everest since Hillary and Tenzing made it to the top in 1953. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Every era is known for its protests. In the 70s, it was anti-war. In the 80s, anti-fur. And when I come back, I'll peacefully demonstrate for a 90s revolution that's still the rage. And I lock brakes.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halvesies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
As the saying goes, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. Well, Anti-Lock Braking Systems, or ABS, stands firmly for stopping and against locking. ABS originated in the aircraft industry, where stopping big, fast planes on short runways is critical. Adapted for panic stopping in cars, this sophisticated system uses a computer to sense when wheels are about to lock, then automatically regulates braking action. Now, don't protest. With Anti-Lock Brakes, forget pumping. Just press firmly and let ABS do the rest. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. The Draft Domestic Security Enhancement Act contains a few sweeping changes to current law. This is perhaps the most significant one. It says that the executive branch of government, that is the president and his cabinet, have the ability or right to declare any organization a terrorist organization, which they pretty much have right now. They have that ability. For example, the Taliban. They've said John Walker Lind is now in prison. He was participating with the Taliban, and they declared it a terrorist organization. They got a bunch of people down in Guantanamo Bay, terrorist organization. So they have that. They have that largely right now. But in addition to this, Domestic Security Enhancement Act would say that once the president has declared an organization a terrorist organization, all of its members can be stripped of their United States citizenship. So if you were to join an organization, and even the word join is vague in this, it could be as little as show up for a meeting, maybe even be in the same building where a meeting is going on. Join an organization and say you don't have any clue that they're a terrorist organization. I mean, it might be, it might not be. This is the kind of thing that is so open to abuse. And then the president says, well, that's a terrorist organization. Boom. You're no longer a citizen. You no longer have any constitutional protections. None. And this is scary stuff. Very scary stuff. Bob in Santa Monica would like to say a few words about the president. Welcome to the program, Bob.
Well, good day to you.
Happy Memorial Day.
Well, happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit kind of hot under the collar. I'm here in Santa Monica, and yesterday I was taking some visitors in the town, taking them to Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting there, you know, online waiting to get on one of the rides. And, you know, we're talking about the latest thing being the president's tax policy, these cuts.
To whom and who
they may benefit. And you know, you kind of get the looks from other people and they kind of get engaged in conversations. Next thing you know, some jerk will say, Well, at least we don't have Al Gore as president.
Mm-hmm.
As if that's some kind of an appropriate response to this mess that we're in. I mean,
yeah.
It just kind of. I mean, first of all, I don't think there's any evidence to make one believe that Al Gore couldn't have handled any kind of a situation that might have come up under his watch, if indeed he was the president.
Sure.
Perfectly honest. At the very least, on paper, Al Gore would be more ideal of a candidate than President Bush.
Right. And Al Gore actually went to Vietnam, whereas Bush went AWOL for 18 months. But, you know, but I think that what's happening in a larger sense and what you're identifying here, Bob, is this tribalism that seems to be happening, that people, rather than staking out philosophical positions, and this is a great segue into what we're going to talk about this hour, rather than staking out philosophical positions and saying, I am voting for this person because I believe a certain way, here are my principles, and this person agrees with those principles, rather than that, people are taking sides as if it's a sports team. And of course, I remember when we lived in Michigan, I was a Detroit Tigers fan when I was a kid, you know, and this was 40 years ago. And it was, you know, the Tigers could do no wrong. And as long as Ernie Harwell was reporting the sports reporting. And it's like, it's our team right or wrong. And that aspect of dysfunctional nationalism is being associated now just with political parties and politicians. And I question whether it serves us well.
No, I'm actually ashamed to a certain degree of the mentality of the average American, and of which I am one. But unfortunately, people I think have been brainwashed to a certain degree by this media. I don't want to act like I'm a conspiracy type, but there is a certain media savvy that the Republicans and the conservatives do have.
Oh, yeah.
And if it can't be acknowledged, then it can't be dealt with.
And I think that this tribalism is being really fed by talk radio. And one of the things that I'm trying to do with this program is not, the old Uncle Remus story about, you know, if you kick the tar baby, you stick to it, is not do the same thing on the other side. I tend to be more philosophically aligned, at least at this point in time, with the Democrats, the progressives, and the Greens than I am with the Republicans, although I see good on both sides. But I'm trying to point out the good and bad on both sides and help people understand those issues to the extent that I can. I think, though, on the other side, there are people who maybe even started out as conservatives philosophically, but have become essentially partisan Republicans. And right-wing talk radio has basically become the unofficial voice of the Republican Party rather than of the conservative philosophy. And I'm not sure that that's serving us well. I'm not sure it's serving our democracy well.
No,
Bob,
it's a terrible time that we're in, and I suppose we must be optimistic in order to pull out of it. Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah, we absolutely have to. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate your calling. I think that there's considerable hope. There still is hope. The fact that we're having this conversation means that there's hope. And our question for this hour, how is democracy affected by the conservative versus liberal debates, by these discussions that we're having right here, and the whole posture? Let's first of all look at what is a conservative. And this is where I think it's so important for us to understand what the word conservative and what the word liberal actually means in a historic and in a a pure philosophical sense. And when we get into liberal in a minute, I'm going to get into Karl Popper's liberal position papers and things. And probably the most eloquent and outspoken voice for conservative principles is Russell Kirk, who wrote a book called The Conservative Mind back in the 50s, as I recall, and The Portable Conservative Reader and other books. And he has put together a list of 10 items that this is, in his opinion, the conservative worldview. And I'm going to go through the conservative ones, then I'm going to go through the liberal ones, and then we're going to look at some of our politicians and ask the question, what are these people? And hopefully it will, at the very least, raise some eyebrows. So, Russell Kirk. First, the conservative believes that there exists an enduring moral order. That order is made for man, and man is made for it. Human nature is a constant, and moral truths are permanent. Now, this is an important one. In fact, he goes on, he says, it has been said by liberal intellectuals that the conservative believes all social questions at heart to be questions of private morality. Properly understood, this statement is quite true. So, the first step of the conservative philosophy, as identified by Russell Kirk, is that there is an absolute and unchanging moral order, and that man and the humans, he says, man is made for it, that we are superimposed upon it. Now, the problem, and I would say that, and he goes on to say, you know, the atrocities and disasters of Greek in the 5th century B.C., that civilizations have collapsed when their moral order has collapsed. And I'd say, to some extent, that's a solid argument. And that those liberals would say, yes, there is a clear moral order. And that moral order has to do with natural law as well as man-made law. And that no one, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I don't want to be making this adversarial. Let me just present to you first the conservative point of view. Second, the conservative adheres to custom, convention, and continuity. And Russell Kirk says, conservatives are champions of custom, convention, and continuity because they prefer the devil they know to the devil they don't know. Human society is no machine to be treated mechanically. The continuity, the lifeblood of a society, must not be interrupted. So in other words, there's this sense of, we're not going to change things because things are just going along fine. Third, conservatives may believe in what may be called the principle of prescription. And what this means is that things established by immemorial usage should not be changed. There exist rights of which the chief sanction is their antiquity. Kirk says, conservatives argue that we are unlikely, we moderns, to make any brave new discoveries in morals or politics or taste. Now, keep in mind, by the way, that the conservative position in 1776 was, don't go to war against England. And there was a strong argument. In fact, up until July 4th, 1776, the majority of Americans identified themselves as royalists or as loyal, loyal to the crown. And it took a while to get a majority opposed to the crown. Fourth, conservatives are guided by their principle of prudence. Kirk says, any public measure ought to be judged by its probable long-run consequences, not merely by temporary advantage or popularity. And this is one of the points that Eisenhower made in his farewell address. He said, we can't sacrifice on the altar of temporary gain our future. Liberals and radicals, the conservative says, reading Kirk now, are imprudent, for they dash at their objectives without giving much heed to the risk of new abuses worse than the evils they hope to sweep away. Providence moves slowly, but the devil always hurries, Kirk says. Sudden and slashing reforms are as perilous as sudden and slashing surgery. Now, interestingly, this is the exact same principle, the principle of prudence, that is being espoused by the European Union in saying that they don't want to take genetically modified foods without their being labeled. Anyhow, we'll get back to this. Fifth, conservatives pay attention to the principle of variety. The preservation of a healthy diversity in any civilization, there must survive orders and classes, Kirk says. Differences in material condition and many sorts of inequality. And he says all other attempts at leveling must lead at best to social stagnation. In other words, it's a good thing that there are rich and poor and those in between, and that any attempt to make the rich poorer and the poor richer is not consistent with liberal thought. There's a great quote from James Madison. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but it's something to the effect of one of the principles of good government is to reduce the extremely wealthy to a level of comfort and to raise the poor to a level of comfort. It was almost like Karl Marx. The fifth, conservatives pay attention to the principle of righty. Number six, conservatives are chastened by their principle of imperfectibility. Human nature suffers cannot be recovered from certain grave faults, the conservatives know. To seek for utopia is to end in disaster, the conservative says. We are not made for perfect things. All that we can reasonably expect is a tolerable, ordered, just, and free society. So these are starting out the conservative principles. We'll wrap them up after this break. Stay with us. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the iAmerica Radio Network, where we still honor we the people instead of we the transnational corporations.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got her down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now. 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now. 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
It's always reassuring to learn that top White House officials are operating today in the time-honored tradition of so many Washington public servants. They are resigning to become high-paid corporate lobbyists, cashing in on their government connections. Take our brand-new Homeland Security Department. Please, take it far away and bury the whole bureaucratic, autocratic monstrosity in a landfill where it will eternally burp gas but otherwise won't bother us. Unfortunately, there it is, alive in Washington and gorging on some $40 billion of our tax dollars each year. The Homeland Czar is former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge. Working out of the White House, Ridge had four top deputies to help him create the Homeland Security Department. Did his inner circle move with him into the new agency? No, no, Pollyanna. All four are now lobbyists, helping corporate clients grab a chunk of the billions of dollars that HSD is now doling out in fat government contracts. When asked by a reporter about the obvious conflict of interest involved here, one of Ridge's former aides said, "This conversation is over," and hung up. Another was more forthcoming, noting that not only did she have great access to Ridge and other top HSD decision makers, but also that, quote, "all of us are very close friends with the governor and see him on many different occasions, not just professionally." Gosh, what a cozy world Washington is. Homeland Security is a bloated bureaucracy that won't make you and me one bit more secure. But it will secure billions in federal boondoggles for connected corporations. It's been dubbed a huge honeypot for lobbyists. And one enthusiastic lobbyist representing such fat cat military contractors as Lockheed Martin and Raytheon bragged, "We're trying to help our clients avoid the landmines and find the gold mines in Homeland Security. I'm very bullish on this." This is Jim Hightower saying, there you have it, your security dollars at work. Feel safer?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Democracy, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we don't get our talking points from right-wing think tanks or the RNC. Number seven, conservatives are persuaded that freedom and property are closely linked. Upon the foundation of private property, great civilizations are built, says Russell Kirk. And economic leveling, conservatives maintain, is not economic progress. Private property has been a powerful instrument for teaching men and women responsibility, for providing motives to integrity, and for supporting general culture. Eighth, conservatives uphold voluntary community, quite as they opposed involuntary collectivism. Centralized authority, Kirk says, when you give in to centralized authority, then community is in serious danger. Our question for this hour, how is democracy affected by conservative versus liberal debates? We're going through the conservative worldview first, then we're going to go through the liberal worldview, and then we're going to, having contrasted these and looked at also at the, there are numerous similarities, it's startling, then we're going to ask, you know, are some of our politicians, which are they, what are they, what are they about? So private property is the seventh item. Private property has been a powerful instrument for teaching men and women responsibility, for providing motives to integrity, and for supporting general culture. Eighth, conservatives uphold voluntary community, quite as they oppose involuntary collectivism. And nine, the conservative perceives the need for prudent restraints upon power and upon human passions. Politically speaking, Kirk says, power is the ability to do as one likes, regardless of the will of one's fellows. A state in which an individual or a small group are able to dominate the wills of their fellows without check is a despotism, whether it's called monarchical or aristocratic or democratic. The conservative endeavors to so limit and balance political power that neither anarchy nor tyranny may arise. Power cannot be abolished. It always finds its way into someone's hands. And he talks, and Kirk talks about, Russell Kirk, the one of the seminal founding thinkers of conservative thought in America. Conservative constitutional restrictions, political checks and balances, adequate enforcement of the laws, the old intricate web of restraints upon will and appetite. These the conservative approves as instruments of freedom and order. A just government maintains a healthy tension between the claims of authority and the claims of liberty. And finally, tenth, the thinking conservative understands that permanence and change must be recognized and reconciled in a vigorous society. He goes on to say, the conservative, in short, favors reasoned and temperate progress. They're not totally opposed to progress, but they're also strongly opposed to any rapid changes that are in the name of progress. In fact, he goes on to say that when this happens, it can produce a monstrous growth, a political cancer, the sort of thing that devours our host. So we have the 10 principles of conservative thought by Russell Kirk. Let me just quickly recap these things. That there is an enduring moral order, number one. That is, there are certain items of morality that are not changing, that never have changed, never will change. Second, custom, convention, and continuity. In other words, the old saying, I remember when Louise and I lived in Germany back in the 80s, we would ask people, why do you do things this way? And the town that we lived in was 850 years old. And there were families that had been there longer than that. And we'd say, why do you do things like this? And the answer was always, because that's the way it's always been done. And this was a serious answer. And it is all over Europe, and it is in parts of America. This is the conservative worldview. The conservative adheres to custom, convention, and continuity. Third, the principle of prescription. You don't change things unless it is proved that the change is going to be less harmful than the not change. Fourth, guided by the principle of prudence, which is a variation on that. Fifth, conservatives pay attention to the principle of variety. In other words, there have to be rich and poor and all these different classes. Conservatives are chastened by the principle of imperfectibility. Freedom and property are closely linked. Uphold community. And the need for prudent restraints upon power and understanding permanence and change must be recognized and reconciled. When we come back from this break, we'll talk about the liberal worldview. Stick around. We'll be back soon. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, James Carver here again to tell you about InPhone, a new enhanced directory service you get by dialing 888-411-1111. First blush, a lot of people say, Jimmy, that's way too many numbers to dial. Well, that dog won't hunt. No, it won't. Plug this number into your speed dial, and fella, you got one-button access to the most powerful information service ever. That's InPhone, 888-411-1111. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Water hyacinth is popular with some gardeners and despised by some natural resource managers. I'm Jill Ladwig for Earthwatch Radio. Water hyacinth is a floating aquatic plant with large purple and violet flowers that's native to South America. Problems crop up when the plant gets out of home gardens and into lakes and marshes. What was a pretty plant then turns into a weed. Water hyacinths once clogged many lakes and rivers in Florida, but management agencies eventually brought it under control. The plants are a major problem in Africa, too. Jeffrey Howard works for the World Conservation Union. He recently wrote a report on invasive species in Africa's wetlands and lakes, and he says water hyacinths pose a serious environmental threat.
I think probably its greatest impact is that it covers the water surface completely. In parts of Lake Victoria, it grew so fast and it grew so thick that no light got through to the water and it used up all the oxygen.
Howard says the lack of light and oxygen killed off fish and aquatic plants and animals. The plants make it almost impossible for people to fish or to move across the water.
It stops the movement of boats. People can't get to the water's edge. People can't get to their boats. Even if they can get to their boats, they can't get them out into the water because of this thick growth of plants, which can grow, you know, a kilometer or two out into a lake.
Howard says African water management officials have started to fight water hyacinths with a weapon that worked in Florida. They're using two species of beetles from the plant's home range in South America. The beetles eat only water hyacinths. Howard says they've cleared out as much as 95% of the plants in a few places where they've been introduced. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman radio program. Our chat room is alive and well. Boy, we've got a wild conversation an interesting conversation going on in there. If you want to visit the chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click on the radio show link. And then when you get to the radio show page, click on the chat room link and it'll take you in there. We've been looking in the last half hour. We outlined the conservative worldview as defined by the foundational conservative thinkers of the 20th century. One of them, Russell Kirk, who most conservatives point to, certainly Goldwater and others would have, and John McCain today would say this guy is one of the leading thinkers of the conservative movement. William F. Buckley sort of stepped into his footsteps in later times. Karl Popper filled that position on the left with the liberal principles in 1947, as I recall. Yeah, April of 1947, the Liberal Manifesto was launched in London, and 475 liberals came together in Oxford in November of 1997 to revisit it and came up with a liberal position paper. These are the principles of liberalism. And there's a little bit of crossover. Some people say, well, you know, the difference between American liberalism and European. But this is, I think, a good description of the liberal principles. And we also have the 10 principles of the Green Party, which I want to go through real quickly. So the liberal position paper, this is by Karl Popper. Number one, the state is a necessary evil. Its powers are not to be multiplied beyond what is necessary. But acknowledging that the state is a necessary evil. This gets back to the issue that Marc Bloch, the great French scholar of feudalism, talked about when he suggests that feudal powers arise. Feudalism is ruled by the rich. Feudal powers arise when governments become weak. That there's always a dynamic tension between the desire of feudal powers to take control and the ability of a state to assert itself or protect its citizens. And in a democracy where the state is we the people, as opposed to a theocracy or a kingdom, where the government is not we the people, it's another group of the rich, there is that dynamic tension. So Popper says, it's easy to see that the state must be a constant danger. And if the state is to fulfill its function, it must have more power, at any rate, than any single private citizen or public corporation. Although he acknowledges that there's a danger in a state having more power than any private corporation or citizen, we can never eliminate that danger completely, he says. The thing is not to pay too heavily for it. Number two, the difference between a democracy and a tyranny is that under a democracy, the government can be got rid of without bloodshed. Under a tyranny, it cannot. It's pretty self-explanatory. Number three, democracy as such cannot confer any benefits upon the citizen, and it should not be expected to do so. So that sounds provocative. He goes on to say, only the citizens of a democracy can act. What democracy does is it provides a framework within which citizens can act. So democracy in and of itself is not an active force, it's a structural force. Number four, we are Democrats not because the majority is always right, but because democratic traditions are the least evil ones of which we know. I would say this is very much like the prescriptive principle of the conservatives. Number five, institutions alone are always never sufficient if not tempered by traditions. This is like conservative principle number two. Number six, a liberal utopia, that is a state rationally designed on a traditional, tradition-free tabula rasa, is an impossibility. In other words, the whole idea of a utopian state, as was advanced by Karl Marx and those back in the 19th century, is simply not possible. And he cites Kant as one of the thinkers. For the liberal principle demands that the limitations to the freedom of each, which are made necessary by social life, should be minimized and equalized as much as possible. Number seven, principles of liberalism may be described as principles of assessing, and if necessary, of moderate than replacing existing institutions. Small steps. Liberalism, he says, is an evolutionary rather than a revolutionary creed. And number eight, among the traditions we must count as the most important is what we call the moral framework. corresponding to the institutional legal framework of a society. This incorporates the society's traditional sense of fairness or justice, or the degree of moral sensitivity it's reached. And he goes on to point out, nothing is more dangerous than the destruction of this traditional framework. Its destruction was consciously aimed at by Nazism. In the end, its destruction will lead to cynicism and nihilism, to the disregard and the dissolution of all human values. So, in summary, the liberal worldview, liberty and individual responsibility are the foundations of civilized society. The state is only an instrument of the citizens it serves. Any action of the state must represent the principles of democratic accountability. Constitutional liberty is based upon the principles of separation of powers. Justice requires that in all criminal prosecution, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy and fair public trial, free of public influence. That the state control of the economy and private monopolies both threaten political liberty. That rights and duties go together. That every citizen has a moral responsibility to others in society. And that a peaceful world can only be built upon respect for those principles and upon cooperation among democratic societies. Now, the Greens in the United States weigh in on this with a 10-point, their value system. The Green Party's 10 key values. Number one, grassroots democracy. That democracy should be, you know, driven from the bottom up. Number two, and by the way, if you have comments on this or if you'd like to be on the program, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Number two, social justice and equal opportunity, which is self-explanatory. Number three, ecological wisdom. We are part of nature, not separate from nature. It's one of our items in our Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, which is on our website at tomhartman.com. Number four, nonviolence. They say, however, without being naive about the intentions of other governments. Number five, decentralization. The Greens say, we support a restructuring of social, political, and economic institutions away from a system which is controlled by and mostly benefits the powerful few to a democratic, less bureaucratic system that operates more at the local level. Number six, community-based economics and economic justice. And they suggest there should be a living wage which reflects the real value of a person's work. We support independently owned and operated companies which are socially responsible, as well as cooperatives and public enterprise that distribute resources and control to more people through democratic participation. Number seven, feminism and gender equity. They say, we have inherited a social system based on male domination of politics and economics. And they're calling for a system that instead respects the differences of opinion and gender, and that equity between the sexes is a human value. They define feminism, by the way, and this is the most widely accepted definition, as a feminist is a person who believes that women should have equal rights and equal powers with men, period. That's it. That's the beginning and end of it. Now, the so-called conservatives, mostly on the radio, have tried to redefine that and pushed it to extremes, but that's the definition of the word. Number eight, respect for diversity. We believe it's important to value cultural, ethnic, racial, sexual, religious, and spiritual diversity. Number nine, personal and global responsibility. And number 10, future focus and sustainability. Our actions and policies should be motivated by long-term goals. We seek to protect natural resources, safely disposing of or unmaking all waste we create, and developing sustainable economics. The Green Party closes this by saying, we must develop economic, technological, and fiscal policies that are responsible to future generations who will inherit the results of our actions. So we can see that there are some differences, there are some similarities. And ask the question, how is democracy affected by the conservative versus liberal debates? Senator John McCain gave a speech on February 28th of 2000 in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where he says that he was a proud conservative, a proud Reagan conservative. And he goes on, I remain true to our conservative principles. It is conservative, John McCain says, to pay down the national debt, to save Social Security and Medicare. Well, this is interesting. Now, you could argue that the conservative principles are opposed to Social Security and Medicare, that these even go beyond liberal principles into socialism. And that has been the argument that has been made by people on the right ever since Roosevelt first put into place Social Security back in the 1930s. And yet you could also say that one of the conservative principles is not to produce rapid change. The rapid change is destructive. And so you don't go, you know, slashing things and changing things. So therefore, I suppose you could argue that McCain is right in some ways when he says that it's conservative to save Social Security and Medicare. He says it is conservative to seek to improve the lives of our servicemen and women. Well, I'm not sure that that's the domain of any one political side. And he says it's conservative to demand that America keeps its promises to our veterans. Again, I think people right across the political spectrum would agree with him on that. And then he starts this complaint. He says, I am a pro-life, pro-family, fiscal conservative, and advocate of a strong defense. And yet, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and a few Washington leaders of the pro-life movement call me an unacceptable presidential candidate. They distort my pro-life positions and smear the reputations of my supporters. Why? Because I don't pander to them. Because I don't ascribe to their failed philosophy that money is our message. Now we see the cracks. This is, you know, as we move out of the realm of philosophy, what is conservative and what is liberal, and into the realm of partisan politics, which is all about who has power. Apparently, McCain says, appeals to patriotism can only be heard by card-carrying Republicans and only certain Republicans at that. Not the kind of Republicans who might dissent from the soft money ethics of a tired party establishment. He's speaking, of course, of George W. He says, why should you fear a candidate who believes we should first cut taxes for those most in need? McCain's suggestion was to cut taxes to the middle class and the poor, not the rich. He says, my friends, I am a Reagan Republican who will defeat Al Gore. Unfortunately, Governor Bush is a Pat Robertson Republican who will lose to Al Gore, which, of course, is what happened. And he says, we are the party of Ronald Reagan, not Pat Robertson. We are the party of Theodore Roosevelt, not the party of special interests. We are the party of Abraham Lincoln, not Bob Jones. That's how he ends his speech. And interesting. So his opponent, George Bush, comes along and calls himself a conservative. And Ted Rall wrote this excellent piece back in December called George Bush Liberal. He says, recognizing that war is the ultimate destabilizer, Republican conservatives are typically isolationist. He talks about how the Republicans opposed World War I. They strongly opposed World War II. That our involvement in World War II. In fact, some say that Roosevelt had to engineer Pearl Harbor by cutting off the oil supply to Japan, knowing that they would retaliate, not knowing exactly how or where, but that he had to have some sort of dramatic response in order to involve us in that war. And Bob Dole, in his 1976 vice presidential campaign, referred to World War I and World War II as the Democrat Wars. Wars started by the Democrats. That the Republicans traditionally, or the conservatives traditionally, have been an anti-war party. Don't involve yourself in foreign conflicts. That Richard Nixon created the EPA in 1970. That in 1990, George Bush signed the Clean Air Act. So then he says, now let's look at W. Number one, Bush the big spender. During the 2000 campaign, Bush promised to pass a balanced budget amendment. I think we just saw what happened to that. In fact, we have heard an announcement that George W. is planning next year's tax cuts. He got a $1.3 trillion tax cut in 2001 and a $350 billion tax cut now, which has driven up the national debt in total by almost $2 trillion. All of this tax cut money is simply borrowing. They are borrowing. Our country is borrowing money to give this tax cut to the people who will then contribute money to George W.'s campaign. The Republicans, George W. had raised almost $200 million in the last election cycle compared to Al Gore's $124 million. Massively outspent Al Gore. And, well, that's it. I'm going off on a tangent. Bush the big spender, number one. Bush raised taxes in the replay of 1980. Bush's decision to cut income and state taxes for wealthy individuals, blah, 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 to deal with, and he points out 20 to 25 states are raising taxes right now because of Bush's tax cut in, federal tax cut in 1991. He says, Bush's tax cut is a brazen lie. It's merely a tax shift from the rich, who pay most of their taxes to the feds, to the middle class, whose tiny federal tax cut will be more than erased by a rise in state and local taxes. Bush, the big government kingpin. During the 2000 presidential debate, George Bush said, quote, Al Gore is a person who wants to increase the size and scope of the federal government, end quote. And George Bush just presided over the biggest reorganization and expansion of the federal government since 1947. He says, Bush's bizarro family values. Respecting the elderly is the ultimate traditional family value. But the Congressional Budget Office says that $1 trillion in Social Security trust funds have already been looted to pay for Bush's $1.35 trillion tax cut of 2001. Bush puts America last. Wages are spiraling downward. The stock market has tanked. Unemployment and underemployment are rising, Rawl says. A recession is the worst time to be opening U.S. market to foreign countries whose slave wages allow them to undercut the prices charged by American companies. But that's exactly what George W. is doing. Stay with us. I'll be right back, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense. From the radical middle, this is Tom Hartman.
Strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about conservative and liberal values and candidates. And Jim in Santa Fe has been waiting patiently on the phone. Jim, I apologize. My window here that tells me when somebody's on the line had gotten buried by our chat window, and I had forgotten to pull it back up again. And you've been patiently waiting. Thank you so much. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
That's no problem, Tom. I have a thought. This does relate to something about a half an hour ago that you said. You know, the idea of voting for a candidate because you agree with their philosophy and not just, you know, that you feel comfortable with them or what you call the tribal sort of instinct. You know, that's fine, except that everything that they say, so many of them say, including, let's say, George Bush, just to take a handy example, I think is so focus-tested. Is abandoned after the election. I can't think of the examples I was thinking of right now. But, I mean, if you could trust what somebody said as far as what their position was, what their philosophy was, that would be one thing. But since you can't, I feel more comfortable just trying to get a feel for somebody's level of intelligence and humanity and those kind of qualities and figure I'll go with that, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that, and the reality is on the right, for example, John McCain has been very consistent over the years, and George Bush had a very clear record of lying to win political office in Texas repeatedly. He constantly broke his campaign promises. He would say whatever was the expedient thing, and he did the same thing in 2000. He made a whole series of there's several websites that chronicle all of Bush's lies and broken promises, and the number is mind-boggling. So you'll find the same thing among Democratic politicians as well, the ones who just, you know, they use the weasel words to get into office. But then there are also many politicians who I think are very consistent and stick with what they've said. So it's dangerous, I think, to paint any to paint politicians with a single brush, or to paint either party with a brush. And that's my concern, is that there are these commentators who control so much of talk radio and talk TV, and particularly the Fox Network, who are out there just painting all Democrats with one brush, painting all liberals with one brush, and holding up all Republicans as perfect, and that's the way it is. Jim, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate your calling. And this is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. And we'll be back tomorrow at same time, same place. Look forward to seeing you then. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.com.